introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it
this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right, and welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And once again, we're down a man. Wide receiver one, Miles Gorham. Busy week, traveling for work, moving, all kinds of stuff. Things that take precedence to recording with us knuckleheads. So, you know, we're gonna soldier on. We're going to do our thing. But we got our man back, QB1. We missed you. What's going on, my man?
What's going on, man? I'm back in action. You know, the draft is out the way. Things have slowed down a little bit for me, so y'all be proud of me. I'm back on my Game of Thrones action. I actually started all the way back over.
Man, you never go finish if you keep starting over every year.
Oh, I was only like 4 episodes in, so okay, and I didn't really remember what happened, so I just started all the way over.
Yeah, that makes sense. Once you get to where you were last time, you got to start live tweeting again because that was awesome.
I just started.
All right. Saxy Prince, what's going on, my man? How you doing? How you keeping busy? Man.
You know, just keeping busy with work. We're in a really tough time right now, and then, you know, just doing the things I love and enjoy, you know. So
when we can get some new music, man.
Hopefully soon. I'm kind of in the process of getting some like new equipment. That's why I've been out for quite a bit of time, because like all I have right now is like my laptop to record, and quality doesn't come out the way that I wanted to. This is why I took such a big hiatus from it.
Makes sense. Well, we got some fun things to talk about today, but before we hop all the way into all of that stuff, I wanted to first, you know, thank the listeners riding with us here. We've been trying to pump out a bit of, you know, quality content, up the output of things coming from us here. But if you do have any suggestions, any feedback, definitely shoot it our way. We are open to all of it. We want to keep growing Climbing the Pocket, and we want to thank all of you who've been with us here since the beginning. But we also have a bit of an announcement to make, and it's one that really just made sense. Really, as of this episode and going forward, Climbing the Pocket will be partnering with Vikings Territory and Purple PTSD. You know, JR already has a working relationship with Vikings Territory. He was their lead draft analyst. Luke Braun from Purple PTSD is on the Pocket Protectors podcast. So we have partnered with them. We'll be jumping in. They'll be promoting our pod. We'll be reminding you on every one of our episodes, you should also be checking out the Purple Journal podcast, which you can find on purplePTSD.com. So we're really excited about that. Not to be left out, of course, we have our ongoing relationship with the Daily Norseman that comes from us through all of the great and wonderful work that Saxy Prince does, going out there and setting his mentions on fire so that, well, really, I guess the rest of us can have something to laugh at while he's dealing with all of them. And I guess last but certainly not least, we announced a new partnership yesterday with Realistic Randy. Going to be coming in, dropping at least once a week spots for us on the YouTube channel. So if you haven't already, hop on over to Climbing the Pocket on YouTube, subscribe, and you will get all of the videos from Realistic Randy. And actually, you know, all of these podcasts end up there as well. So that was a lot of shilling. Got that out of the way. All right, let's get to it. So, gentlemen, bit of a question here. It's sparked a little bit of conversation on the timeline. And so, JR, I will start with you here. I know you were a multi-sport athlete in what we would call, I guess, the traditional North American sports. And so the question that has been posed is, which of the major sports has the best athletes? So we got football, we got basketball, we got soccer. We've had a couple people throw in hockey. For your money, which sport has the best athletes, JR?
You know, I'm going to go with football. I mean, you talk about a sport that's basically controlled chaos in between four boundaries. But, I mean, there's no holds bar. For the average play lasts for 6 seconds. But between that 6 seconds, you have guys of all different shapes and sizes flying around different parts of the field. You have to have your head on the swivel no matter what position you play. And, I mean, it's just a reckless sport. And I think what makes football so different from the other sports is that everyone has to do their each and every individual part. And it's just the sum of the major parts as a whole. And each position has their different pieces to the puzzle. And not every sport has different guys in every different shapes and sizes. Yes, you know, I know hockey has guys that are much larger than some football players are. Basketball obviously have guys that are taller than what football players are. But you talk about guys that are 300-plus pounds that are able to move around very athletically. And it's just a collision course with other guys on the opposite side of the ball. So there's a lot of different moving parts within football. And I think what separates football from the other sports is all of the different shapes and sizes of the athletes included within it and how fast and tip-top shape they have to be in for 60 minutes.
Okay. All right. That's a pretty compelling case that JR has just made there for football. Saxy Prince, which way are you going? What sports you taking?
I actually take maybe not in the opposite direction, but I'm going to go with basketball. You know, the one thing that you see as far as basketball, you know, everyone's probably played in, you know, middle school, high school and whatnot. But obviously you start seeing the huge separation in the sport when you get to the collegiate basketball. You know, those D1 programs, you know, only have, you know, anywhere from like 5 or 6 guys that are on scholarship. And then, you know, a few walk on type players, but you might only have, you know, 8, 9 guys on the team. And all of them, you know, have specified roles. And then obviously once you get off of college, you go to the NBA and, you know, these are some of like the best athletes in the world. You really don't get, breaks, very often. A lot of the things that you see as far as basketball, the reason why sometimes people don't really truly understand the technique and athleticism that comes with it is because they're doing things so explosively and such at a high level that everything just looks subtle. And I think that's kind of like one of the biggest difference from basketball to football, because football, you can kind of see when something's like, it's really flashy and whatnot, but usually you can't see the sheer amount of athleticism in basketball until you see some dude jumping, you know, 40 feet or not 40 feet, but 40 inches in the air and just dunking on someone. So yeah, if you look at guys like LeBron James, who is just so, like, people don't really truly understand how much more athletic he is. Granted, he is a little bit bigger. He is comparatively to really anyone else in the league. You know, just like the quick lateral movement, you know, just truly encapsulate how much better athletes it is. I mean, you let's even look at football. How many times do you see on, you know, Monday night when they're kind of running down like where guys have played, and they always mention, well, Clyde Rudolph, he used to play basketball. Jimmy Graham used to play basketball. You see a lot more guys switching from basketball to go play in the National Football League because either they didn't have the technical or athletic skill to continue to compete at the NBA level. But you rarely ever see converted football players to basketball. I know height plays a role as far as that, but yeah, I'm going to go with basketball above everything else.
Okay. All right. JR, do you have any retorts to any of the points that Saxy Prince brought up there?
No, I mean, I'm fine. Basketball would definitely be my second answer, and I'm fine with either answer though.
The thing the point that you made there, Prince, when you're talking about how it's come to a point where we just kind of take for granted how athletic basketball players are. It's I can't remember what game in the series it was when Donovan Mitchell went up for a rebound and he just jumped over one of the forwards on the other team and like legit just jumped and cleared him completely. And the announcer was like, whoa, he kind of jumped over that guy. But like it's crazy. He just cleared a person who was, you know, over 6'6".
Exactly.
Jumping off both his feet, going up for a rebound. He missed the rebound and just jumped over a human. Like, yeah, and it was just like stuff like that where I'm inclined to lean towards, you know, basketball, but it's one of those things where, you know, at that level, they're all ridiculously athletic. You know, I mean, the arguments that were made and, you know, there, and I did have this conversation, obviously I'm in Canada, so we had this conversation with folks up here and hockey did come in. And the people making the argument up here actually did talk about the things, but you know, the athletic qualities of folks in hockey versus I think the things that we saw on the on on the timeline today where it talked about the toughness and the grit of the hockey players versus the divas in the other sports. So, all right. Well, that one, I guess we'll split it. We'll need Miles to come in and weigh in next time to break the tie on this one, football versus basketball. I guess we'll say that, you know, of the people that have responded thus far, they mostly agree with JR. It's 57% of the people that responded to the poll on the Climbing the Pocket account. They agreed with JR. So, I mean, if that, I guess we'll give it to JR for now, and then we'll see where Miles goes when he gets back.
Yeah, a bunch of football fans agree that football is the most athletic sport. Yeah, definitely.
It's a big surprise. It's a big surprise. But, you know, it's like it's a 1.5 for the votes for JR right now. We'll see where it all shakes out at the very, very end. All right. Some other stuff to talk about now that we got, you know, the question of the day out of the way. Was another thing posted by our man JR here. And JR, I'm going to go to you first to get your top five. But, you know, Bucky Brooks had the question, you know, if you could pick the NFL's most explosive offenses based on a combination of playmaker, play caller, quarterback, playmakers, and O-line, which teams would crack your top five? And he said, keep in mind, you're looking for a squad with elite guys in place in every category, particularly at the OC. So, JR, you know, you posted this. Obviously, there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of people talking about this one. What's your top five and why, man?
Just so this question was kind of tough for me because there really is no perfect team due to, you know, play callers leaving every single year and free agency. Obviously, guys are leaving and guys are coming in. And the only perfect team in this equation probably right now would be the Rams, because they have everything coming back as far as a play caller, quarterback, their playmakers outside of Sammy Watkins, and most of their offensive line is coming back. So they have all those things intact. But just my top five was the Steelers, the Rams, the Vikings, the Saints, and the Eagles in no order. And I think all of those have those qualities that you're looking for as far as from a play caller, the quarterback, the playmakers on the perimeter, and the offensive line. But if I had to rank them, I probably would go Steelers, Rams, Saints, Eagles, then Vikings. That probably would be my top five. But there's a lot of fringe teams as well, and I mentioned this as well. Talk about teams like the Falcons. They definitely could be in there. But the only reason I didn't include them in my top five is because I'm not a big believer in the play caller and Steve Sarkisian. I think he kind of holds that offense back to a degree. But Kyle Shanahan did set the standard very high because they had a lot of outlier factors when he was the offensive coordinator there a couple seasons ago when they went on the Super Bowl run. But another team that definitely could be factored in there, obviously, is the New England Patriots. The Packers definitely could be one, but I don't really like their playmakers on the perimeter. And I'm not a big fan of their backfield. And the 49ers definitely are an up-and-coming option, but I still think they lack some weapons outside as well for Jimmy Garoppolo, and I still think they're a bit unproven. I want to see them do it over the long haul a bit. So my top five was Steelers, Rams, Vikings, Saints, and Eagles.
Okay, very compelling. Like it, like it, like it. Saxy Prince, what about you, man? Top five.
I guess in no particular order. I would go with Saints. I'll go with New England. I'll go with the Chargers. I'll go with the Steelers. And then my last one would probably be, I think I would still go with Atlanta. I'm kind of with JR, where I'm not a huge fan of Sarkisian, but I think if you got a really good play caller in there, I think you would be able to see more of the explosiveness, obviously, with the tandem running backs. You have Julio Jones. You do have 2 and 3 at wide receiver. But yeah, they're my top five. I think with the Saints, why I love them so much is, I mean, most of it is centered around Drew Brees and Sean Payton. I think that tandem has kept them relatively competitive in a lot of years where they probably shouldn't have been as competitive. I mean, look at last season where, you know, they really started off pretty poorly and exploded towards that last half of that season. I think Chargers are a little bit underrated. You know, Phillip Rivers has been one of the most consistent quarterbacks in this league for a while.
Yeah, speak on him, man. Tell us about these Chargers, because, you know, that was the one I'm glad you kind of circled back on them, because, a lot of people don't talk about them, but that's a pretty good team over there.
It actually is a really good team. You obviously have Miles' boy, Keenan Allen. I think he's a very underrated wide receiver
for some. We don't really talk about him as a top 10 wide receiver, I think, enough. But I think he has his technical skills are amazing, as well as, you know, I mean, I know he's faced some injuries over the last couple of years, but that's a guy that you have to talk about. You know, obviously, you have Melvin Gordon over there. I just think that the Chargers offense is a little bit more underrated. And they did have a really good draft. I believe it was last season when they, you know, added some really heavy hitters on the offensive line. Keep Phillip Rivers clean. So I wouldn't be surprised if I see them competing a little bit more this year. I, you know, obviously had to go with the Steelers just because, you know, Antonio Brown, and they always just seem to be able to hit on their wide receivers. You know, even if they lose one, they're able to get another guy to kind of slide back in there. So they just are constantly able to be explosive. Obviously, having Le'Veon Bell, and even when Le'Veon Bell's not there, they seem to be able to continue to find some kind of productivity from their backfield. I think New England mostly just centers around Tom Brady. Tom Brady can really, I mean, I could go out there and Tom Brady will make me look good. But they, you know, they still are able to, you know, they have Gronk and they're still able to get their really athletic, essentially short wide receivers who were able to still have production throughout the season. But yeah, as far as my top five, again, in no particular order, I go with Saints. Go New England, go Atlanta, Chargers, and the Steelers.
And you know you can't go to New England. He'd trade you away. He'd be up in Kraft's office. He's like, we can't have that man in here. Trade him. Get him out of here.
I'd show up like Charles Bigsby. That's what I would do.
just piggybacking off of Yinka's Chargers point, I think they have the most underrated quarterback, running back, receiver trio in the NFL.
Yep, definitely.
With Rivers, Melvin Gordon, and Keenan Allen.
Yeah, man. And JR, what are your thoughts on Tyrell Williams? Because, I mean, they tendered him at the second round level because they really didn't want to lose him. I guess, what are your thoughts on him as a player? And, you know, with him playing as he has, is Mike Williams ever going to get a chance to emerge?
We'll see. We know Mike Williams really struggled his rookie year. And, I mean, if Tyrell Williams continues to improve, there really isn't a role for him because Keenan Allen obviously can play the slot or the outside, but he does most of his work outside. Tyrell Williams is a guy that's manning the other outside at Z. And obviously Mike Williams cannot play the slot at all. That would be a disaster. He cannot do that. So if both of those guys keep improving, we know Keenan Allen is a dude. He's a playmaker for them. Tyrell Williams continues to get better. There really isn't a spot for Mike Williams. And then another underrated piece that a lot of people don't talk about is Travis Benjamin, who's their deep threat. And we all know he can break a game open at any point. So they have a very underrated offense. And then a guy like Hunter Henry, who's a very underrated piece as well. So I really like this Chargers offense from the outside in.
All right. You guys got me hype on this and keep
completely
making me think,
completely
keep making me think that, that Eric Eager might be onto something with his sneaky early Super Bowl pick of the Chargers.
Completely forgot about Hunter Henry.
Yeah.
And I was huge on Hunter Henry. What was it? Last year?
Yeah, and then
you know last year.
Gates finally they finally sent him someplace else, right?
Yeah.
It was time.
Yeah, it was time. So Hunter Henry, it wheels up for him this year. So we'll see what he's able to do with all that volume now. All right. Top fives. Moving along. JR bringing us yet another barbershop argument here. So we'll go through it. Interesting and great debate topic in the office today. Who's more important to their team's success? Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson? JR, you already talked about this in the office, so I'm actually going to kick this one to Saxy Prince first, get his thoughts in here, and then you can bring us home on it. Prince, our bitter rival in Green Bay or the man out west in Seattle? Who's more important to their team's success this coming season?
As it pertains to more important to their team success, if we literally look at that, the way that you put that question, you have to go with Russell Wilson. I think when you look at what's happened to the Seahawks over the last year or whatnot, their defense has been decimated. You have guys getting injured, leaving. Really all the weapons around Russell Wilson are starting to disperse. The offensive line was absolutely atrocious, and it has been for several years. Russell Wilson is having to do more for them to be at least competitive than I think Aaron Rodgers is having to do with Green Bay. Now, I think we all really like Davante Adams. I think Randall Cobb has always shown himself to be a really good number two. I mean, I know Jordy's left, but they have some other weapons that are there. They have Jimmy Graham, who is older. But, you know, when you really look at the Seattle Seahawks, I mean, outside of Doug Baldwin, you know, you have some weapons, some guys that are still a little bit unproven. But, I mean, that offense still revolves around Russell Wilson being so successful. I know that the way that Green Bay's offense is kind of crap, and it really relies on Aaron Rodgers to kind of play this backyard football type thing, or street football, whatever you want to call it. But I don't think he's particularly being, you know, when you look at his weapons, I think he actually does have some pretty decent weapons. Randall Cobb has been pretty consistent over the last 4 years. Davante Adams, I think he's proven himself to be more of a wide receiver one, which is why they were able to let go of Jordy Nelson. But like I said, as far as Russell Wilson, you're really not giving very much to work with. Instead of helping them build an offensive line, they drafted a running back that they probably could have drafted in the fourth round.
I know the analytic crew is not going to like it.
I'm not sure if my ears heard what I thought they heard, but my ears heard something.
You need to say it again.
Because JR, hold on here, because you know we might have to rewind that and just play it back on a loop a couple times to make sure people don't forget it here. Okay, what did you say? Say it again.
I said Rashad Penny should have been drafted.
No. That's not the part that I wanted to play back again. It was the part of a couple sentences or words before that part where you said something about, you know, them probably should have bolstered the offensive line before getting the running back or something. Did you hear what he said?
Sometimes my ears are bad.
So if you can just tell me what he said.
No, here's the thing is, y'all know how I feel about you. I'm more than okay drafting running back in the first round, but it to me that offensive line was so bad and requiring Russell Wilson to do so much, where it's like, I know that even if they drafted a first round running back, that first round running back would have been running into the same issues that Russell Wilson was going to. So, like I said, I'm okay with getting Rashad Penny later, but as far as the offensive line, it was so putrid where you needed help up front. You know, I think you had enough guys that you could have drafted. You could have gotten, you know, James Daniels. You probably could have drafted Austin Corbett, you know, Will Hernandez, whatever the case was at that time. I was disappointed that they went running back and not offensive line, because at that time I think the offensive line was a huge area of need, more so than really any area for them, you know, really besides. Mm-hmm. So
okay.
So yeah.
So all I heard there is that, you know, doesn't matter how good your running back is if the offensive line can't block for him. But anyway, you know, you went with Russell Wilson, and you know, we don't need to get sidetracked in yet another running back.
Do we talk about running backs a lot?
I mean, we do that every now and again. Now and again, we talk about those things every once in a while. JR, Saxy Prince is going with Russell Wilson, making a pretty compelling case. What are your thoughts? Who's more important?
Yeah, I agree. I go with Russell Wilson. I think he's the epitome of what the Seattle Seahawks stand for. And he's been their franchise player. The past few years, that defense has been declining. We know they've gotten older. They've gotten rid of plenty of guys this offseason. Richard Sherman, Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett. The list goes on and on as far as the guys that they have that has exited Seattle to this point. And he was that offense a year ago. When Chris Carson went down or got injured in week 4, they were historically bad on the ground. And he accounted for 98% of their offensive touchdowns a year ago. That's just ridiculous to me. And if you take him off of that offense, I think they'd probably be a team picking in the top three. But if you take Aaron Rodgers off of the Packers, I still think they will find a way to win 4 to 5 games, if not more. And that's where I see the difference. And obviously, Aaron Rodgers is a huge part of what Green Bay does offensively. And he is the engine of that offense. And we saw that last year after they started 4-1 and then they were terrible down the backstretch. I think they finished like 1-9 or something crazy like that. So I think Russell Wilson is more valuable, but Aaron Rodgers obviously is more physically gifted. But I just think so many people underestimate how important Russell Wilson is to that offense. Their offensive line is so bad, but he's able to create off script and just able to make so many plays for their offense to keep them afloat and give them chances in games when without him, they would be so, so bad.
Well, y'all know I agree with you since, you know, I wrote that article that showed that Russell Wilson is the quarterback that in the last 2 years has outplayed his surroundings by more than anyone else. And the thing that neither of you guys brought up that I'm kind of surprised at when we talk about the weapons and all that stuff, but Green Bay's offensive line has been really good for a really long time. Like they're at like opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to, you know, pass protection, really mostly pass protection. Run blocking is so okay. It's all right. But their pass protection is, you know, on another level compared to what Russell Wilson's been dealing with out there with, you know, Tom Cable trying to get him killed on the field, getting basketball players and converting them to left tackles with less than like a full year of playing the sport and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's Russell Wilson all day, every day, especially going into next season as, you know, that defense, as JR said, continues to decline. You know, if Russell Wilson doesn't play out of his mind, Seattle does not have a chance. So, yeah, I agree with both of y'all. I'm sure everyone that hears this will agree with us too, because of course, right? Right. So this next one here is the next topic. Next thing we want to talk about is something that Realistic Randy talked about on the pod, on the video and in the podcast that he dropped this week. And something that, you know, JR kind of brought another story that's in a similar vein to our attention today, where you had, you know, Big Ben being, you know, the diva that he is after, you know, year after year of contemplating retirement, you know, after every bad loss or in the offseason, Big Ben coming out and saying that he was shocked that the Steelers drafted a quarterback in the third round because he thought they could get other players that might have been able to help them win now. And basically let it be known that he wasn't here to help Mason Rudolph get up to speed and all of that stuff. And then, you know, the tweet that JR shared was basically someone letting us know that, you know, Lamar Jackson's been reaching out to Joe Flacco and, you know, looking to get integrated into the office, get up to speed, talk to the vet, get that insight, get that information. And Joe Flacco is not about it, not returning the calls, not returning the texts, wants nothing to do with the rookie. And yeah, I want to get y'all's thoughts, and I don't want to get y'all's thoughts, which is some of the stuff that we saw on the timeline today, where it's like, could you imagine if Cam Newton did that? We don't have to. There'd already be a ton of letters written to the editor, et cetera, bad teammate, selfish, all that other stuff. But I want to get y'all's perspective on this, you know, I guess as a competitor, whatever it might be, as a professional. Is it not the responsibility necessarily, because it's not, but should these veteran quarterbacks be helping these young guys come in to make the team better and all of that stuff? Or should they be looking out for numero uno, understanding that these young guys are coming in to take their spot? And Saxy Prince has been cycling in and out of mute for a little while here, so I feel like you got something you want to get off your chest. So we'll start with you again on this one, Prince.
Yeah, I think there's a fundamental difference between these two scenarios, specifically these two scenarios. First and foremost, Big Ben is an asshole, and I think you can bleep that out if you need to for the kids who listen at home. But
now they've heard asshole before.
Yeah, they probably have. But the issue with Big Ben's situation is you brought it up, Jason. It's the fact that he's gone to the organization. He's expressed some feelings of wanting to retire time and time again, offseason after offseason, where he keeps losing, and then he's like, okay, I think I'm gonna retire. Obviously, the Steelers were like, well, we don't want to have to go through this again, because obviously if Big Ben retires, they have no plan B. They don't know who they're going to go to as far as their number two. They drafted Mason Rudolph, which is like, okay, Ben, if we have another season where you're just like, you know what, I'm contemplating retirement, we at least have a plan to start grooming this guy, this to be the next guy of the future. So in that circumstance, I think Big Ben should, you know, put aside his ego and just be like, you know what,
I know I'm the guy. They didn't draft this guy to be, you know, to be the guy who was going to be competing with me. They drafted me for when I'm ready to retire. He's probably going to be the next in line, which is a different situation. You know, can some people say, like, yeah, Ben doesn't really want to help him out. He doesn't have to. Yeah, that's definitely the case. But Ben also doesn't need to come out and say, you know, why did they do that? Why did they make that decision? I'm here, all my other stuff. That's my biggest issue with it, because I feel like he's letting his ego get the better of him and stuff. I understand he's a competitor and all that stuff, but it's he didn't have to say anything about that, considering he's just the guy who, again, threatened to retire in back-to-back offseason. Now, on the other side of that coin, we have Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson is Joe Flacco's replacement. Now, I can understand the dude who has a family, doesn't want to lose his job, don't want to lose his money. I can understand not wanting to give this guy who's significantly more athletic, has a way higher ceiling than he does, give him every opportunity to potentially take that job from him this season. I can understand Joe Flacco be like, nah, bro, you got to learn it on your own. That's the competitor in Joe Flacco, but that's also just Joe Flacco just being a smart businessman. He's trying to protect his brand. He's trying to protect himself to continue to compete and continue to make his own money. So I get that. You know, it's the Ben Roethlisberger situation kind of reminds me of, like, in 2014 when we – or 20 – was it 2015 when we had Sean Hill here with Teddy Bridgewater? There was no point where Sean Hill ever felt like, oh, well, I'm going to be competing for this guy for the start. Sean Hill knew what he was doing. He's like, I'm here to back up, make my money. Teddy's the guy. I will help him however he need to. He was okay with that role, right? And the opposite side, we have, you know, Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson. That's very much a, you know, maybe like a Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith type situation. Oh, I was going to say more of a Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers situation. I understood why Brett Favre did not want to groom Aaron Rodgers. First round pick, guy who's looked at for the future. Brett Favre kind of getting a little bit older, dropping off a little bit more. Same thing with Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson. So I'm actually okay with Joe Flacco not trying to help Lamar Jackson out. I think he should still be like nice to him, like, hey, they're still teammates, you know, just be a good guy. But as far as wanting to give this guy help to steal his job from him when he has a family that he needs to think about, I can understand Joe Flacco from that standpoint.
Okay. All right. Like it. Very passionate in that one there. JR. I mean, obviously, you got some experience at this quarterback position. You've been in some quarterback rooms. So help us out. Help us understand from both perspectives here. Ben Roethlisberger, I guess all the perspective, not just both. I guess Ben Roethlisberger, Joe Flacco, the new guy coming in. What are those dynamics? How does it work? And I mean, how should it work?
Yeah, so Yinka made a lot of great points, and I agree. It's a case-by-case basis, and I think we're dealing with two different cases with Big Ben and Joe Flacco. Let's first talk about Big Ben. It's the same situation that he was in with Tommy Maddox when he came into the league. Tommy Maddox helped him to the best of his ability. And I don't want to say he made the quarterback that Big Ben was today, but he helped him along the way and helped prepare him to be the quarterback that he is today as far as preparation, being prepared for games and going out and executing the situations or the task at hand. And I think Big Ben can do a similar thing with Mason Rudolph. Now, Rudolph isn't as highly touted or as highly hyped coming in as Big Ben was, because he's not a first-round pick. He's a guy that was a third-round pick, a guy that's more of a lottery ticket selection that they hope works out on the tail end of Big Ben's career whenever he does hang them up. But I think it's irresponsible by Big Ben coming out and saying the comments that he said, especially he's threatened to retire every single year. And I think it's very unfair to the Steelers for him to come out and say that as well, because they need to have that backup plan in place, because that's the right thing to do as an organization, because you really can't trust Big Ben and what he's saying at this point, because he's been on both ends of the spectrum saying, now he's saying he's going to come out and play 3 to 4 more years. But a couple months ago, he was threatening to retire and walk away from the game. So the organization did the right thing by drafting Mason Rudolph, and I think he's a perfect fit, and he's a very ideal guy to be the heir apparent to Big Ben Roethlisberger down the road. With that being said, now let's look at the other side of it with Joe Flacco. And this one, it's a bit touchy for me because I've actually been in a similar situation that Joe Flacco was in. But I just don't like the way that Joe Flacco is handling it, because we've all know that he's shown to be a classy guy at this point. I've never heard anything bad being said about Joe Flacco from an off the field standpoint. I've heard he's a stand up guy from the things that I've heard about him, but he's no dummy. He knows that Lamar Jackson is the long-term guy there in Baltimore. Why can't he do the same thing that Alex Smith did for Patrick Mahomes last year? And what I have a problem with is Joe Flacco can help Lamar Jackson out to the best of his abilities as much as he can. Now, when it comes to playing on the field this year, he can still take care of his business this year, because this year is a huge job interview year for Joe Flacco. He's not playing for his long-term contract with the Ravens. He's playing for an interview for other teams around the league. That's what Joe Flacco is playing for this year. And I just don't like the way he's handling it, because he's basically silenced Lamar Jackson and he's leaving him out to hang, in my opinion. And you want to leave a situation better than when you found it. And I think he can help Lamar Jackson do that, because everyone knows that he has some mechanical flaws, and obviously he's behind on the playbook, and he doesn't know the playbook as well as Joe Flacco does, because he's been in the system for so long. So there's a lot of things that he can help Lamar Jackson out with, so he can be the best quarterback for the Ravens in the future. Now, what Joe Flacco needs to handle is that he needs to take care of his business and do what he needs to do this year, so he can prove to other teams around the league that he'll be playing for next year, potentially, that he can still be that guy that he showed during his Super Bowl run.
Someone was trying to unseat QB1, and it wasn't me.
Yeah, that's what I need. I need this here. What was this QB competition? Was it Saxy Prince versus JR? Was this freshman year? Well, I guess give us some of these details, man.
Well, no, it was my last year. It was my senior year. I was battling a knee injury, and I was really hurt. I didn't have the senior year that I thought I was going to have. We were having a losing record, and the coaches have already came and told me that they really wanted to get this freshman in. And I didn't have no problem with that, because I knew that I didn't want to play at the NFL level, because I didn't have no aspirations of doing that. I was just tired of getting beat up, and my body just couldn't take the punishment of playing football anymore. And I knew I didn't have no future in the NFL. Like I said, I wasn't no dummy, and I knew what I wanted to do after my career. So, you know, I'm a classy guy, and I was going to do whatever was best for the team. And I wanted to get this young guy ready so I could leave this university in a better place than I found it. And now this guy goes on. He's a 3-time champion, and he's one of the highest record holders at the school now. So I'm very proud of his success. And, you know, he's like a little brother to me now, and he's always known as my heir apparent. So I'm very proud of that. And I think that's the situation that Joe Flacco could do the same for.
All right. Okay. I like it. Very passionate on those ones there. I guess, Prince, you got any stories about someone coming to take your spot? I guess, where would somebody come to take your spot?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean,
in like the band or something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah. But I had this, it was jazz band, probably my junior year of high school. And, you know, there was this younger guy, I played with him in middle school and stuff. And, you know, he had been taking lessons and stuff. At that time, my family couldn't afford for me to do lessons. So really anything that I was doing was like my own practicing or just like playing in church and stuff. But yeah, there was this guy who he ended up beating me up for, you know, the first chair or whatever in jazz band, feeling a little salty about it, whatever the case is. And then there was this song that was actually a tenor solo song. So obviously the first chair is usually the person who gets like those big winded things, or whatever. But it was kind of a thing where it's like, okay, well, whoever wants it, like you guys kind of have to battle it out. I'm just like, hey, this is my chance to shine. This is my chance to do, yeah, show you guys that you made the wrong decision.
Hold up. Y'all had a drumline situation with the,
it was pretty legitimate, man. So yeah, we both met into a room, got to play the piece or whatever the case is. And he's just like, well, I'm just going to go with Yinka on this. And I'm like, you damn right, you're going to go with Yinka as far as this piece. But got an honorable mention at some jazz like conference that we did later on that year. And I'm just like, y'all made the right decision. So.
Okay. Saxy Prince going in here. You can resheet, you can resheet music though, right?
Oh, of course you can.
Okay. All right. Just keeping the drumline thing going there for a little bit, you know. All right. All right. Well, you know, it's the off season. The schedule came out. You know, one of the things that happens when the schedule comes out is that folks start running, you know, analytics and algorithms and all kinds of stuff here. And then Vegas comes out with their win total predictions. Not really predictions, but they set the market for the win total. So I figured, you know, it's early and, you know, we may come back and revisit these things as the off season rolls along. But we just going to talk about it a little bit here. So, you know I sent you guys the link. We are over at oddshark.com looking at some stuff here. So, JR, I know you were looking through them here and, you know, some things jumped out at you. You were a little surprised at some other things on there. But, you know, if you had to take one over bet this season, what would be the one you were going to take just based on what it looks like right now that you're seeing? Which one out there where you're like, oh, wow, I can't believe they have that team so low?
This might surprise y'all, but the over I'm going to take is the Redskins at 5.5. I think that's really low for them, and I think they'll find a way to win at least 6 games in that division. Another over that I really do like probably would be the Lions at 7.5. I think they can find a way to win 8 games. So I definitely would go with the Lions at 7.5 and the Redskins at 5.5.
Gary's going to edit that last part out because, you know, we can't say nice things about the NFC North on this podcast. just take that out in post-production like it never, never happened. So, Prince, same question for you. You're looking over. What are your favorite overs that you saw on the list?
I would probably – I'm really actually really bad at reading all these. But I think I would probably go San Francisco. You guys kind of know that I actually really like San Francisco. I think Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be significantly better this season, as well as like I like the fact that, you know, Kyle Shanahan, we know he's an offensive genius, so I'll go with that one. I think the under for Arizona is a little bit, or they're at 5.5. I would take the over on that one. So I don't think they're going to be as bad. I know that they still have some questions on the defense, and then obviously Sam Bradford being their starter and whatnot. But I think they had a really good draft. So
I love it how anytime we talk about any of the former Vikings QB, you just throw a little bit of that subtle shade in there. A little bit of that subtle shade. Well, you know, they got the issues, you know, Sam Bradford being quarterback and everything.
He's coming off. I didn't even see, that's the thing. See, that's what's bad about it, because I didn't even try to do that. I was just saying he's coming off injury, so I know that there is some skepticism there, but I definitely feel like they will be better than 5.5.
Over under 6 games for Sam Bradford this year.
Oh no. Ooh, ooh, we can't do that, yeah.
Oh, and they just got Josh Rosen too. Right. I'm gonna say I'll say over, but he'll last 7 games.
Yeah, I'll take the over too.
I feel like this is going to be like one of those seasons that Sam had with the Vikings, where he's going into a situation with no protection whatsoever, and like he really should be out after week 2, and he's somehow going to miraculously play like 15 games, and they'll throw Rosen in for garbage time in week 16 when they're out of the playoff picture or something like that. Because, man, who plays on the offensive? Can you name 1-2 starters for the Arizona Cardinals on their offensive line?
Andre Smith, enough said.
Oh boy. Oh, I wish you hadn't named that one. Okay. Oh man. JR, same question for you with the unders. What unders are you looking at? Like, you know, that team's not gonna be nearly as good as this line that they set for him.
This is stealing the Bills at 6.5. I think they're gonna be pathetic next season. There's no way they win more than 6.5 games. No way. I don't see it at all. I'm taking the under for them by a mile. I think that's stealing. I think Vegas did everybody a favor putting that at 6.5. There's no way they win that many games.
But they're a playoff team, JR.
Have you seen that roster on paper? Vlad Dukas.
Yes, face of the franchise. Face of the franchise.
Okay. Vlad Dukas. Man. Whew. Okay. All the linemen not good enough to play for the Vikings.
Whoa. Free Shady.
Man, they do. They need to send Shady someplace. Get him up out of there. All right, Saxy Prince, how about you, man? Which team are you looking at? Like, wow, Vegas was really optimistic on this one.
I think Buffalo was going to be the ones that I chose. Man, I think. Okay, I'm going to go with this one. I think New England is actually pretty high. And I think they're going to be a little bit lower than people are expecting this season.
So I'm gonna go with that. But they get to play Buffalo and Miami.
They do.
And the Jets.
Yeah. Yeah. That might be some of their only wins, but they still have to play the Vikings though too. So
this is true. True. Okay. Yeah. So New England's too high. We're taking the under. You wouldn't be the first person that I've heard this offseason say that, you know, we're at the end of an era with, you know, maybe Belichick's lost his edge or in the Super Bowl, getting outcoached by Peterson, kicking field goals when he should be going for two, drafting running backs in the first round. Like, you know, he very well may have fired the analytics team or something, lost his edge, and, you know, the dynasty is over.
Probably, yeah.
And we'll see, you know, after running backs in the first.
The Seahawks at 8.5 is tempting too.
Yeah, I thought about that one too, just because of, like, I just really have not very much confidence in the Seahawks going into the season.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, that was one that really jumped out. The Seahawks having a lower projected win total than the 49ers. It's just, you know, I mean, it's highly like, it's very possible just based on all the upheaval that's going on in Seattle, but just, you know, it's still strange to look at when you see them.
Yeah.
JR, I guess for you, surprise team as you look at these when you're looking at you know, the lines, and that can be either a surprise better or a surprise way worse when you're looking at these ones at the you know, the over under totals that have been published here. I guess any team that you're really thinking of that's really going to come out and kind of shock people?
I won't necessarily shock, but I think they're going to win a couple more games than what's expected, and that's the Buccaneers. I think 6.5 is a bit low for them, and I know that they're the preseason champs or the offseason champs every year because they seem to have a great offseason. But I really like what they have done, but they're in such a tough division. The Saints have gotten better. The Panthers have gotten better. And every team has gotten better in that NFC South. And we know that division changes every single year. But I don't want to say I believe in the Bucs, but I think they'll win more than 6.5 games. So I'll slam the over with them.
Okay,
that's a good pick. That's a good pick, JR, because the Bucs actually, you know, when you're looking at yards per attempt, passing yards, they were actually ranked 9th last season. So I think they're slightly underrated as far as that offense being able to move the ball.
Like it. Saxy Prince, what you got, man?
I don't want to get burned by this, but I might be it. But Cleveland Browns, like, I think that they are. I like the players that they've assembled and stuff. You know, getting Baker Mayfield at one, you got your franchise guy. I mean, they have some weapons. Their offensive line has been pretty great for the last couple seasons. Obviously, you lose Joe Thomas. As far as defensive weapons, I mean, you have Myles Garrett. I mean, like, you have some playmakers on the other side of the ball. So I wouldn't be surprised if I saw them win, you know, 8 games this season, you know? So they're kind of my surprise team right now.
Okay, and you know, again, you know, Yinka, for someone who fights against the analytics of running backs in the first round, you align with the analytics people quite a bit. You know, Mike Clay used to work with Pro Football Focus, now over at ESPN, projections guru, actually had a bold prediction very similar to this, saying that he thinks Cleveland could even sneak into a wild card spot.
It just means, Jason, that I would build a really, really good team. But there would be that one year where I draft Saquon Barkley. That's what it means.
I mean, it means your team probably wasn't that good if you were drafting Saquon Barkley. I mean, you know, he went, what, 2nd overall?
Oh, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, your team would have to be pretty bad, you know. But anywho, that's
yeah, one season. We lost our quarterback that season, and okay. I had to rebuild and stuff. So
that makes sense.
I don't believe in Hugh Jackson.
No.
No. No. Oh, definitely
no
not.
No way
definitely
they get not. In the playoffs. No way.
But I, mean, I definitely feel like they can win. They definitely can win some games.
Yeah, there's still a lot of time for them to. Still a lot of time for them to put the private investigators on Hugh Jackson, find some stuff like they did on our boy Patricia.
Yeah, that's true.
Damn shame, right there.
Hey, Lincoln Riley's gonna be their head coach next year. Bold prediction.
Oh boy, JR locking it in early. Like it, like it, like it. Okay. Well, you know we're talking over unders. Can't let y'all off the hook just talking with all these other teams without having to put your neck out there a little bit. So, you know, the Vikings locked in highest win projection. Well, tied, you know, but, you know, highest number for any team out there at 10.5 with the Packers, New England, the Eagles, the Steelers. JR. If you had to put a bet in right now on the Vikings, are you taking the over or are you taking the under?
I'm going to go over. I'm a believer right now. I know it's a first place schedule. It's really tough. And there's a lot of things that, you know, goes into having a great season. And we've all talked about the defense really staying healthy last year. And I don't think that's going to be the case next year or this upcoming season. So, I think they can get 11-5. I think that's going to be the Vikings' record this year. So I'm going to go with the over.
Boom. Saxy Prince, where are you going with it? Over or under? Okay, so we just going to say under.
Who's the quarterback again?
Stop
Case,
it.
Case.
Stop it.
No, I'll go with the over. I just think that you know, Mike Zimmer being the head coach, the weapons that we still have on the defense, we have the best wide receiver tandem in my opinion in the league. Dalvin Cook comes back. Kyle Rudolph is a person, and I don't know. I just feel like with that, it's going to be really, really hard, barring some kind of catastrophic injury to Kirk Cousins. I still feel like you can at least get to 10 wins and not even really play that well. But I definitely feel like 11 wins is definitely what's going to happen for the Vikings.
Okay.
Right now, though. Right now.
Right now. Well, these are locked in, guaranteed predictions until we change our mind and have new ones. Okay. Well, before we get out of here, and, you know, shout out to our man David. We put this at the end of the episode here so that you wouldn't have to keep jumping ahead to figure out, you know, when we were done talking about that other sport. But JR, you know, it is basketball season. It is the playoffs. And we know that, you know, basketball is probably your second love after football when it comes to these sports here. And we really haven't, you know, had, I mean, it was draft season, so you were busy, but it's playoffs and it's conference finals time. And, you know, in the West, you got, you know, the Golden State Warriors and, you know, the Rockets. They got some players on that team. I can't remember the name of the players on those teams, but, you know, the Rockets out there. And then, you know, you got on the other side of things, you got Boston and, you know, Cleveland. They got that guy that maybe not your favorite player, something like that. So before we get up out of here, man, I need your thoughts on what's been going on in these playoffs so far. And, you know, for you to tell us a little bit about what you think is going to happen in these conference finals.
This definitely the two matchups that everybody wanted to see leading up to the conference finals. A lot of people didn't think Boston would get to this point because, you know, them missing Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving, a lot wasn't expected of them coming into the postseason. But they're rolling right now. Guys like Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier, who's developed a great relationship with Drew Bledsoe for whatever reason. A lot of people have gravitated towards cheering for the Celtics against the Cavaliers. Now, on the opposite side of that, we all know who the two heavyweights were out West in Golden State and Houston, the two teams that ended up with the best record out there at the conclusion of the season as well. And what a lot of people wanted to see coming into this season was them being in the Western Conference Finals as well. So we got two compelling matchups. I'm really interested in both series. I expect the Cavaliers to win in 6 games. I think it's going to be a very tough, hard-fought series for them, though. I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk like many people are thinking that it's going to be, because I'm a firm believer in coaching matters in the NBA, and I think Brad Stevens is a hell of a coach. I think he's obviously one of the better coaches in the NBA, and I think he can scheme up some stuff to give LeBron some trouble. And I think he's going to force those secondary players behind LeBron to beat the Celtics. But I just think the Celtics aren't there yet. They're just a little bit too young right now, especially guys like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who still are young. So I expect the Cavaliers to win in six games. Now, out west, I think this is tough for me because I'm a believer in the Houston Rockets, but I just don't think they're on the level of the Golden State Warriors. Those guys are just on a different level, man. And I think the Rockets are going to lose this series in six games, so I expect the Warriors to win it in a compelling six games as well. So it's going to be fun, though. I think this series is definitely going to be back and forth. It's going to be high scoring each and every game, but I expect the Warriors to run away with it in six games.
Okay. Saxy Prince, I mean, I know you like basketball too, so I really shouldn't have just hyped it up like JR is the only one around here who watch basketball and stuff. But, you know, what are your thoughts on things that JR, I guess, has laid out here in terms of his predictions? I guess, how have you seen the playoffs so far? And I guess, how do you see them playing out, you know, in these conference finals as we move into the finals?
Yeah, I'm a little different as far as JR. I don't think that the Celtics and Cavaliers are going to be close, really. I have LeBron winning in five games. I do really like Celtics. I think it would be a little bit different. Obviously, they did still have Gordon Hayward and then had Kyrie. That would have been a really fun match. I think that game would have gone to game seven, and I couldn't even say who would be on the, you know, winning side of that. I'd probably lean more Boston if that was the case. They are still a really young team, but they have a really great coach. I think they are going to be one of the more dominant teams in the league for the next couple of years. But I still have LeBron winning in five. Other side of the coin, I actually really like this Rockets and Warriors matchup. I have them actually going to game six. I still have the Warriors winning out just because they're just like they're an offensive juggernaut. And I think you saw the last game where, you know, third quarter, they went on this like 20 point, you know, run. And it was just like, there's just no hope once they do that. And if you're not hitting, it's really hard to beat the Warriors. You know, I don't want to say revolutionized, but like Curry in and of itself has made this game so different because guys aren't practicing their mid-range shots anymore. They're practicing how to shoot from beyond 30 feet out. And it's fun and exciting to watch. I think I told you guys off air, I really love watching the Warriors. And then sometimes I just hate watching the Warriors because, you know, sometimes we don't always get those competitive games where it's just like nail biting and, you know, where it's, you know, down the wire all the time. Sometimes it's just like them just going on, like I said, a 20 point run. And then it's just, like, okay, well, I know the game's over now. So then I have the Warriors winning in six, and then it's, you know, Bron versus the Warriors. I have this game going to game seven. I think the Warriors come out on top, but I think LeBron is going to make it as compelling as possible up until, you know, maybe some last second shot that's going to win the championship. But I would not be surprised if Warriors win, but LeBron is the finals MVP.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. I feel like if we get the Warriors-Cavaliers matchup in the finals, I don't know. Of the teams that LeBron has had to go against these Warriors with, I don't know about this one, man.
Sweet.
I don't know about this one. Like, with all the trouble that Victor Oladipo and them gave this Cavaliers team.
That was a – okay, let's be honest with the Pacers. The Pacers, I think, are a young, up-and-coming team. But Victor Oladipo was playing out of his mind throughout
the Pacers. Stretch. I know. I'm not trying to take anything away from the Pacers. Okay. I'm saying
they were playing at their ceiling.
Very good team. They're an up-and-coming team. But, I mean – if you're struggling to make it past that team playing at their top level, I don't know about either of these teams coming out of the West if they play the way they're able to play, man. Like, the supporting cast that seemed like it might be good in terms of these matchups and everything with these dudes they brought in, I don't know. Didn't gel something, but, like, their defense a lot of the time is just terrible.
Oh, it's real bad.
Unless they're playing, you know, DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry.
Whoever wins the Western Conference Finals is winning.
And maybe they, maybe we'll do that over under. Or
you
what?
Think the Rocket? You think the Rockets would beat the Cavaliers, JR?
Yes. Oh, yes. Boy. Too explosive offensively.
So JR. Okay, let's do it this way. If the Rockets make it there, we already have Prince saying it's going to go to seven games with Golden State. So I think Prince probably might go to six in favor of LeBron if it went to with Houston. JR, if Houston plays Cleveland, what is the maximum number of games that series goes?
Six. Before,
okay, and then if Golden State plays Cleveland, what's the maximum number of games that one goes?
Five.
Okay. Wow. Okay. All right. And that's a lot coming from JR. That's LeBron fan number one right there, saying he just does not see it this year. Okay. Well, that is it. That is the show. That is all we really wanted to talk about today. And again, shout out to our man, David. Basketball at the end of the podcast this time around. And again, shout out to our folks at Purple PTSD Vikings Territory. Realistic Randy, and if you haven't already, hop on over to YouTube, subscribe. Over the next few months, we will be working to figure out some more video content to get for y'all over there, so definitely get in there, subscribe, so when you know the video content comes in, it'll just be popped up, delivered to you right away. Well, that's all we got for today. I am your host, Jason Brown, here today, QB1 JR, and the man, the myth, the legend, the Saxy Prince. And yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.